It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about Aero, Tango, and Fortaleza. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 267, recorded June 28th, 2012. You've been tangoed! Windows Weekly is brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code Windows to get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers every week the latest news from Microsoft. Microsoft had a huge week. We had a huge show as a result last week, but they're rested, they're relaxed, and they're ready to come back and do more. Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Good to see you both.
Good to see you. We have nothing to talk about this week.
God, you just, I mean.
Last week was so exciting.
So much stuff. But that is, it's always like that way. After the key, you know, it's kind of, and those of us who cover Apple understand there's this, you know, dead spot after the keynote.
As we call it, the rest of the year.
You really do, you look
know,
forward
the
to those
downtime
big news
between
weeks.
Apple product announcements.
Right. You wish Microsoft could have spread the Apollo Seacrest, not Seacrest, Seafoam, Surface. You know, why did they call it?
You know why? Because he was at a Microsoft event.
Yes, that's right. I remember.
We never get tired of Ryan Seacrest.
The new Seacrest tablet. It's tabula rasa. So I note, though, however, because you do send me ahead of time kind of a list of things you'd like to talk about, that the very first item says Microsoft was right. What the heck? What does it mean?
I should have put that in quotes or something. I it's kind of a mea culpa moment for me. I had written an editorial, essentially. It turned into one anyway. Back when Microsoft kind of announced, not really announced, but kind of slipped into another post that they were getting rid of Aero. And for me, at the time, it was kind of like that last straw thing. I guess just to step back.
We talked about that.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, I try to be the voice of reason. You know, I think one of the things that differentiates the Windows side of the fence from, say, the Apple or the Linux side of the fence, you know, from an enthusiast standpoint, is that we tend to be less emotional. We try to think of ourselves that way, certainly, than the people on the other side of the fence. But the truth is, you know, I have the same kind of knee-jerk reactions, I think, that anyone else has. And this is one of those classic, you know, giving advice is easier than, you know, following it yourself kind of things.
Yep.
But I had written about that in very critical and harsh terms. And I felt pretty good about it. But, you know, recently, my kids have been using the same old netbooks for years. I mean, 5 years maybe. They're like these Toshiba NB205, you know, one core Atom-based.
God, nothing's older than an old netbook.
Oh, they're terrible. And they're beaten up. I mean, well, by the way, I shouldn't say that. For what they are, those machines were actually nice.
They were cheap. Decent.
Yeah. They lasted all these years. My kids beat the hell out of them. I mean, each one of them has cracks in it. My son's has got a button, like one of the keys is missing on the keyboard. And these things still go and go and go. And so my daughter has been turning toward a Samsung tablet recently because her machine is just so lousy, you know. And so I said, you know, I've got all these computers laying around. I should just hand off computers to both of them. And so rather than inflict Windows 8 on them at this stage, I mean, I don't think that's fair since it's not ready. I put Windows 7 on computers that I was using for testing purposes that have been around for years. And I gave them both, you know, these old laptops, which to them are brand new and beautiful.
You're kind of like Bill Gates. Do you not let your kids have iPods either?
No, actually, okay. I'm in the middle of actually getting rid of Apple stuff in my house. But my kids both have iPods. My son has used an iPad on trips, you know, just for watching movies and so forth. But no, I'm not weird about it. But
really, but why? But you said you dropped that like nothing. You're getting rid of Apple stuff in your house.
Yeah, I don't know if you followed my website recently, but I write about Windows. And I've always covered Apple, and I will continue to do so, and Google too, as sort of a competitive thing. But I feel like the Apple stuff is infiltrated a little too much into this environment here at home, and so I'm in the process. And plus, I think the Microsoft stuff actually this year has gotten incredibly good, and so I'm in the process of switching to that kind of stuff. But that's a different discussion. But anyway, it was interesting.
It makes sense. You're eating your own dog food is how they talk about it in Silicon Valley.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I will continue, like I said, to review and to evaluate Apple and Google stuff. Of course, I mean, I think that you can't really know a product without knowing the competition. That's a very one-sided way of doing things, and so obviously, I will continue doing that. I just won't inflict it on my children. So, but again, that's another story. So. But it was interesting to put Windows 7 on these computers because I've not installed Windows 7 on anything in months and months. And I've been installing all these different versions of Windows 8. I moved from the developer preview to the consumer preview to the release preview. I'd used some different builds in between some of those as well. And I've gotten very, very used to Windows 8. It's what I use on everything. And it was really odd going back to Windows 7. And one of the things I know you and I, Leo, have talked about in the past is that one of the great ways that you can evaluate software is after you've gotten really used to it and really used it, go back and use the old version and see how you feel about that, you know. And for all the complaining about Windows 8, I got to tell you, you know, it was an interesting little comeuppance in some ways. You know, Windows 7 to me looks tired and old. And I had kind of come to that independently. And actually, if you go back and look at the Jensen post, Jensen Harris post that triggered my little diatribe there, he used some similar language. I don't remember. I didn't go and look at it, but he kind of says the same thing about Arrow. You know, a lot of people and myself at the time certainly felt like, oh, you're getting rid of this thing. I love Arrow. You know, what are you doing? But then when you go back, if you make this kind of move from Windows 7 Arrow to the Arrow that exists in the Windows 8 RP, and then you look at the UI that he showed off for the coming, you know, kind of flatter Metro style look, you know, the new stuff looks better. It just does.
Well, it's interesting because I've been thinking about this a little bit too, and Microsoft has really gone, this new Windows 8 stuff is flat. There's no rounded corners. There's no shadows. And all of that is kind of skeuomorphism. It's kind of a style that we've all kind of accepted. But I think it makes sense to dump Arrow, A, because it uses a lot of CPU cycles for what is essentially sugar, you know, UI candy.
Yeah.
I like it.
I think it's you know, not that a lot of people will be using Explorer apps full screen all the time, but I think when you look at some of the stuff like Office is doing, you know, looking forward to Office 15 or whatever, that there's this kind of a flat look that, you know, looks nice. And who knows, maybe 5 years from now, we're going to look back and this flat Metro stuff will kind of date it to this era of this year or whatever. But it was weird. I kind of felt like I should put Windows 7 on my kids' computers because they're kids and they don't know any better. And I don't want to have to sit down and explain how this stuff works. And then I put Windows 7 on the machines and I was like, oh man, this is like borderline child abuse. Like, this is very strange.
Really?
I mean,
really?
Well, getting,
come on.
Having gotten
really?
Used to Windows, I know, hold on. From the perspective of someone who has gotten used to Windows 8.
Well, I understand what you're saying.
It's almost heretical to say this because I know a lot of people are looking at Windows 8 and saying, no, this is where they cross the line. I can't do this.
Right.
But having run just Windows 8 now for many months, I mean, 9 months probably. I would have a hard time using Windows 7. And that actually, I'll review Windows 8 someday, but I think that speaks to some kind of a positive thing about Windows 8 that, you know, maybe they are really heading in a good direction with the UI. So,
yes, I think that's the point. You're not saying Windows 7 is crap. What you're saying is once you start using Windows 8, you come to like it. And now, and this is true. I mean, if you use Windows 7,
you miss it.
When you use Windows 7, going back to XP is kind of a little hard.
Yeah. When I was using the Windows Server 2003 version of Windows Home Server, or if you go back to Windows XP, you know, you've learned to hit the Windows key and start typing to search. And that doesn't work in those OSs. And when that's gone,
right,
it's like you're missing one of your fingers. I mean, it feels weird. It feels like it should be there, and it's not.
Well, that's how technology advances, right? I mean.
Right. But the point being that I think, you know, a lot of people, oh, my God, the start button's not there. The, you know, shutdown's in a different place. All these things. And it's funny because you get used to it, and then it's different when you go back to Windows 7, and now you don't like that. Or at least that was the case for me. So
right.
Mary Jo is, of course, going to give it a passionate defense of Windows 7, I suspect. So I'll shut up and let her do that.
No, I'll just say I still am holding to my view that for the kind of machine I have, which is a laptop that was shipped with Windows 7. I have no intentions of ever putting Windows 8 on this machine. It's just, it's not made for that. And I'm not saying I'll never use Windows 8. I'm just saying on this machine, it's not going there ever. It's this machine works great with the mouse and the keyboard. And I just am one of those people who, if it works, don't mess with it.
I don't like people like you.
I know.
Well, but Mary Jo is speaking for the business community.
I am.
Oh. And this is what we're predicting the business community to say as well, which is I don't need anything more than Windows 7. I don't want to retrain. It works great on my existing hardware. I don't want to buy new touch hardware. Right. And I'm sure there's going to be pressure on Microsoft to keep Windows 7 alive. I'm starting to think that as a sop to, I'd love to hear your opinion. I said this on Twitter this Sunday, as a sop to the OEMs who must be a little bruised by the Surface announcement, I wonder if Microsoft's going to say, no, you guys keep making those Windows 7 machines. We know they're going to sell. Know. Why don't we have two versions of Windows?
I don't know if they'll do that. I could see them extending the amount of time they give businesses to have downgrade rights to Windows 7, they did with XP.
But they did that before, right?
They've done it before. And, you know, they want to do what their customers want because they don't care really if you're buying Windows 8 or Windows 7.
Exactly.
In no way. They get paid.
Exactly. Right? And isn't this a way? I understand that they're all in on Windows 8, and they just certainly don't want to give the impression that they're not all in on Windows 8. But... Yeah. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, Lenovo, if you wanted to keep making Windows 7 a little longer than you might.
You are correct to say all in the way you said that, by the way. But I think that there's this, I don't want to call it genius, but there's kind of an ingenious aspect to pushing Metro on people, right?
Evil genius.
I don't want to go there, but they want to get it in front of people.
No, they have
to. And it just opens up this whole new ecosystem of things that work and look alike. And I think that there are some benefits to that. And I do believe
it's pulling off the Band-Aid. It's saying if we do it slowly, if we let you have Windows 7, you're just going to not move on. You need to move on. So this is going to hurt.
Some people are always going to choose incorrectly on that one. No, they're going to say do it slow. I don't care how much it hurts.
This is going to hurt. It's for your own good. And this is circling back to getting to your point, Paul. As somebody who is kind of an early adopter and has been using Windows 8 for a while, it in fact is fine.
The only other reason it's not fine. What about, okay. I'm still like, I think about all the businesses I know who built line of business apps that work with Windows 7 and they are like, okay, I'm okay because those can run on Windows 8 in the desktop, right? But they work a certain way, and I'm kind of used to my users using them in a certain way.
Well, that's why people still use IE6 for crying out loud.
Exactly. I know. And I'm not excusing this mentality or saying this is something. Okay,
but those guys will stay on Windows 7. That's okay.
They will. They'll stay on Windows 7.
So back me up, Mary Jo. You should be backing me up. Don't you?
I am backing you up.
I think that maybe Lenovo and Dell and HP will get a little license to make Windows 7 machines a little longer than they might have otherwise. I remember this happened with Vista, right, and XP, there was this lag time where you could still buy an XP machine for a little longer.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a year.
I don't, it's a different world. I think that there's going to be a split. When you go into Best Buy or wherever and you buy a machine as an individual, I don't think you're going to get that option like you did when Vista came out. You know, Vista was a sea change from sort of a hardware perspective and, I think that was just kind of a tough one. I think this time they feel very strongly that they need to get this out like quick.
And they need to commit.
They're all in.
They're all in.
I mean, not the way you said it, but they're all in a different way. But I agree with
What way did I say? I meant like a poker game where you say, I got a good hand.
It's like,
and if I slow play it, if I don't commit, it's not going to work. The only way the transition to 8 will work is if we put every resource behind it.
This Metro stuff is going to be everywhere and in places that are unexpected. And by Metro, I mean just the look and feel of it. You know, they're really buying into this.
Yes.
And it's interesting to watch different teams from Microsoft use the same language when they talk about, how things work and it's people-centric now.
But you got to admit, there's got to be a little bit of trepidation in Redmond. Like, if this doesn't work, we're all in.
Yeah. I but, you know, I, this that. is... you know, this is like the Charlie Brown moment. You know, you're going to be a hero or a goat.
Right.
That's a Charlie big, Brown was I mean, always you got a goat, multi-billion dollar goat here.
Sure. I think this stuff is strong. I've always liked this stuff.
Yeah. I think the ones who are going to care the most about having a longer period where they can use Windows 7 are the enterprises. And, you know, that comes, it doesn't come back to so much what is the OEM preloading, because the OEM can preload Windows 8 on a new PC and you can have the downgrade rights if you're a volume licensee to Windows 7.
So that's
more what they're worried about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Keep the downgrading available.
Right. Let us downgrade.
That's nothing new.
Right.
Right. And one guy said, why are you calling this a downgrade? I didn't call Windows 8 a downgrade.
Oh, fighting words there.
But yeah.
Well, that's what Microsoft calls it. That's why we call it that.
That's the official term is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just, I just think, tech journalists are like horse riders. You know, we want to see
I'm curious where this one's going.
Me too.
I'm listening.
I watched Secretariat last night, and the guy
like midgets on the back of a large animal.
Yeah, no, we're like it's not a circus. I'm talking here. We're like people who cover the ponies. We want to see a race.
Writers, not riders.
You're writers, not horse riders.
Sorry.
Never mind. I'm sorry.
One of our listeners already said title of show: hero or goat.
Hero or goat. Leo's beating a dead horse. All right. Anyway, let's move on. So Windows, Microsoft was right. Paul's using it, and Arrow, you know, you don't need it.
But again, what it took for me was to be confronted by Windows 7 again.
Yeah.
Because Windows 7, when you come off of Vista, it's a very clean version of Vista. You know, they really cleaned it up nicely. But when you come at it from 8, it's like, oh, yeah. Oh, this used to be normal.
And it's worse than that because Gartner say that the desktop is going to just kind of fade away?
Well, they've never been wrong about anything, so
I believe them.
Take that one at face value.
And they say by 2020. So okay, well we're
gone. Okay.
The year 2020, if the
command
desktop
will be gone by then too.
Is still alive.
This one was kind of like when I read about this Gartner study, I'm like, did somebody actually pay them to do this study?
Yeah,
like,
that's what's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, some, you know, eating less, you lose weight. Study. I felt like that. I'm like, yeah, desktop goes away ultimately someday for Microsoft. Yep, it will.
I have to think the people who pay for this is so that they can write a memo to their boss and have something, you know, with a footnote that says, sure, you know, according to Gartner.
Microsoft frequently cites these studies, right? Yeah, IDC, right. Gartner, and some other companies. So someone's paying them. You know, not that this one was obviously triggered by Microsoft, but.
But let's face it, you and I know these analysts.
We're not impressed. That's all I'm saying.
They're not the kids in the front row of the class. Let's put it that way.
Well, I wasn't going to go that far, but there is a special bus.
You went there. I knew you would. Yeah.
Just throw me the meatball.
I knew you'd go with that one.
Swing for it.
So here we are in the sophomore slump, the aftermath of the big, big week. Sophomore slump. What is you got wax in your, you got beans in your, what is going on? I know when Skype said you had bad connection, it was me talking to you that's bad. You can't hear me.
I can hear you fine, but I don't hear anything.
Just a lot of chatter. Yeah. Are we still bullish?
Wait, there's more stuff though.
There's more? Yeah. Wait a minute. I missed Microsoft explained this months ago. The start button is gone.
Yeah, what's the new explanation for the removal of the start button?
So it may be the same. I'm not exactly sure. But today, you know, it's Microsoft Tech Ed Europe this week.
Oh.
And it's basically the same as Microsoft Tech Ed US, except they get to be in Amsterdam and we get to be in Orlando.
With an accent.
Yes. Yeah. But they did say today, in some session, I believe, based on a report I saw on PC Pro, they said, you know, here's why we're getting rid of the start button, guys. It's because no one's using it, really. Anymore.
And is this more of that telemetry stuff?
Yeah, more of that telemetry stuff where everybody's really just pinning apps to the desktop now and their start button. Yeah, they're not using that. They're just using the pinned apps now.
You know, my mom has a bunch of icons on her desktop. I think we should just have a, like a, you could make it, I know what you do, have like a grid of icons that you could swipe through.
I like it. Yeah. And maybe just, even have folders that hold other grids of icons.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a little complex. Maybe just like a grid of icons.
Just think we'll start with a grid.
Just start with a grid.
Maybe you have a home row of icons that appear on every page.
Okay. I'll give you that. Instead of the start button, I'll give you a dock. How about that?
I like it. Let's call it Launchpad.
This is why you have to cover Apple still. You have to have an Apple.
Windows Launchpad. See, I know what I'm talking about. This Apple stuff here.
I need to make a code name up for that.
So what they had told me months and months ago is that was true, certainly. And the reason they moved launching to the taskbar was because that's what people wanted to do. I mean, which to me made the taskbar like the dock, which... You know, various UI experts have explained is not a very efficient way to do things, but if people like it, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know that anyone was looking for a full screen version of that, but I guess we're being pulled along to that as well. But as far as the start button itself goes, I mean, they've replaced it with this start tip, you know, that appears everywhere in Windows 8, right? And all the Metro experiences as well as the desktop. So it works consistently, whereas the start button as it was in the taskbar could not appear consistently on every screen, because obviously you have to give all the pixels to whatever the application
is. So it's a response really to the full screen problem, not what users are using.
Well, it's probably some of each. I actually, for whatever it's worth, in the desktop, which I do primarily use in Windows 8, pin a large number of applications, more than I did in Windows 7, because I never really thought of it this way, but I just sort of did this implicitly, was the stuff that I use a lot, Word, OneNote, you know, Photoshop, I would have these shortcuts in the taskbar and still do. And then the stuff I would only use occasionally, like Paint, Notepad, whatever, I'm looking at, let's see what's here, you know, whatever else. Those things would just appear in the start menu because it was like the most recently used list. And so they would kind of bubble to the top.
Yeah.
And so what I've learned to do in Windows 8 or what I've changed to do in Windows 8 is actually pin some of those things that I wouldn't have pinned in Windows 7, like Notepad and Paint, just to have them more readily available.
But what happens to those apps you'd rarely use or never, or, you know, only use once a year?
Start search.
You just type the first few letters.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like I have to say, you know, I like Windows 8. I like the way it works. On a desktop computer, the truth is I don't ever go to the start screen and look for a tile and then click on it. I hit the start button, I type, and then I click on that.
Does this argue for the elimination of menus as well?
Well, if you look at the way that Metro apps work, I mean, pretty much menus are gone. You know, there are occasional menus as we know them, but the truth is, I mean, the default UI is obviously open with no Chrome stuff on the sides.
Right.
And then when you go and look at the Chrome, most of those apps, there's not a lot of it. I mean, the point is it's very minimal. And I think that's, you know, obviously for an app like Photoshop, that's not going to work, but, you know, at least for the apps we've seen so far, it seems to work pretty well.
It's the tabletization of the desktop.
It's the dumbening, Leo.
The dumbening. It is.
You know, it's we wrote to an eighth grade level, and now we're going to write to a sixth grade level. But that sounds a little more sarcastic than I intended it. I think the computing is kind of a big tent, and obviously you need to make this thing applicable to the widest possible audience. And I sort of say dumbening jokingly, but obviously, there is always going to be a place for complex applications like Visual Studio and Photoshop and Office. Today, those are going to be desktop apps. I have a feeling that Metro is going to be evolved over time to better support those style of apps.
Do you think you can? Do you think you can? I mean, can you do a...
I do, yeah.
Huh.
Yep. In the beginning, it's going to require, like, I'm just making this up, but imagine if Adobe came out and they said, well, the very first thing we're going to do is we're going to make like a Photoshop Lite kind of thing like they make on the iPad, whatever they call that. And it will just have some of the functionality so that they don't have to change any of the default UI stuff. But maybe the next version is, now Photoshop Elements 11 or whatever will be a Metro app. And because Microsoft has not built in the controls we need, we're going to build our own UI and we'll do like a custom thing for this version. But then in the future, Microsoft revs Metro with more complex controls that work better at higher resolutions and all that kind of stuff. And maybe Photoshop can go down more of a standard route. Or they can just keep doing what they do anyway in Windows. If you think about it, if you look at Photoshop in Windows or on the Mac probably, they're not really using a lot of the UI conventions of those systems anyway. So, you know, what's the difference? Right? I mean, Adobe Photoshop is not anything I would call that a good Windows app. It, you know, it's got its own color scheme. It's got its own.
You know, I look at Apple's kind of had to face this a little earlier than Microsoft will. On the iPad, for instance, they have a program called iPhoto, which attempts to do more than, say, Photoshop Touch. Attempts to do, you know, a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And they've solved some of the certainly challenging UI issues, but you still have a lot of complexity to the point where you could, guess what? Tooltips everywhere. You press the question mark, and you have to, because it's a bunch of buttons that don't necessarily, they're kind of obscure.
It's like they need a pro UI.
Right.
You know? And that's going to be a problem for the iPad, just like it's going to be a problem for Windows RT and Windows 8.
Precisely. I think Apple's faced it first because, you know, they're a little ahead.
Yep. By the way, we'll just go off on an Apple vent because I know Mary Jo loves
it. I'm just saying, I don't know if it's
a good example because they did a lot of these things first. And so if you look at the iPod, which had a very simple menu with a scroll wheel and anyone could use it, mm-hmm. you know, eventually... As you add features and you have to add UI and it gets complex, you get to this point where you had to have been an iPod user the whole time to understand what this thing is doing because it's now so complex, right?
Right.
Yeah, so
there's a language develops, a syntax.
Yeah. Right, and so Metro is starting over today just like the iPad started over with iOS or the iPod you know, started over when they were using scroll wheels. Starting over is very healthy. But you lose things. You know, Microsoft did it before with the Zune PC software where they started over with version 2, which was a complete written from scratch new thing. And it was better than Windows Media Player in some ways, but it also lacked and it continued to lack through its entire lifecycle certain features that you could get in Windows Media Player. And so that's the trade-off. You know, there are going to be people who just embrace this thing because it's new and simple and kind of wonderful. And then there are going to be people who say, yeah, but it doesn't play DVD movies, so I can't use it. Or whatever, you know, whatever the missing feature may be.
So what happens? We just get
creeping elegance.
We get dragged kicking and screaming into the future.
Well, you hope that there's a guiding hand on the product and the design who can make sure that it doesn't go off the rails. But, I mean, the truth is, you know, Metro, as it exists in Windows 8, is a version 1.0 product. It just is. And so people are going to have feedback and they're going to have complaints. And Microsoft's going to look at that stuff and hopefully... update it quickly, not wait 3 years or whatever, but however they do it, are going to have to do stuff like that. Maybe figure out a way that Metro can run on two screens. You know, have the start screen over here and something else over here. Or, you know, all those things that people are going to complain about, that they're already complaining about in some ways, they'll need to address in some way.
Well, it's just times like that, I'm glad they invented alcoholic-infused caramel whipped cream.
I was going to ask if that was cheese, but close enough.
It's 30 proof.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's
very handy when you got to face the future.
Before a meeting. There we go.
All right, bring in the troops. People don't like change. But sometimes change must be forced upon them. Is that what you are saying, Mr. Mussolini? I mean, Mr. Paul Theron?
Yes, I am. Yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. And then, you know, it goes back to my original point at the top of the show, which is like, you know, it's easy to say that.
Yeah.
It's not so bad. And then you have to do it yourself as well.
Yeah. And when you do it, you get sucked right in.
Well, you know, sometimes. It's not always successful.
The other thing we don't know, yet the theme, perpetual theme on the show, what we don't know is... Maybe Windows 8's going to be better on these new PCs and tablets, right? Like, we're all running them on things that weren't designed for Windows 8. All of us. Anyone who puts Windows 8 on something, it's not for it, right? And right. I think you have to hope, like, the drivers are going to be better and the touchpads are going to work better. And, you know, if those things happen, maybe people will be more willing to try it.
Well, I do agree. And, when you play with Windows 8 on a tablet interface, a touch interface, it really is, it's very elegant. It's very nice.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced on the desktop or non-desktop.
And by the way, so, you know, there's not enough time to do what I'm about to suggest. But I think one of the nice things that Microsoft could have done, and maybe they will in the future, is have the thing auto-sense the type of computer you have. Mm. And in one of the setup screens, it could come up and say, it appears that you're running a desktop computer. Do you want us to optimize for that? And maybe one of the things you can do is skip by the start screen, you know, go right to the desktop.
There you go.
They're not going to do it for this version, as far as I know, but they should. And I think that that's one of those things that would kind of help people, you know, in a similar way Yeah, it would be. I just think it would make a big difference for people. But you know, maybe that's something that happens for Windows 9 or whatever the next version is. You know,
already with Windows 9. Do you think they actually are working on Windows 9? Somebody is somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. Based on the timing, definitely.
They have to be.
They have to be. Yep.
Yep.
Wow.
And I'm ready. I'm this. now that I've solved my crashing problem, I want to move on to the next thing.
Oh, have you solved that?
Well, I should say I've worked around it, I think is the way to say it. We've determined that it's a bug with an Intel driver. It affects all Sandy Bridge and newer systems.
It's a Sandy Bridge
bug. It's unclear what causes it to trigger exactly, but if you install Hyper-V, which is Microsoft's Type 0 hypervisor that is new to Windows 8 on the client, you know, Hyper-V kind of installs itself under Windows, so it gets between Windows and the hardware, and there's something about that doesn't fully mitigate it. I guess it's still possible for it to crash, but most people who install Hyper-V find that solves the problem, and it certainly worked for me, so at least, unless I go dark here. I mean, so far, so good.
Well, I hope somebody tells Steven. You'd think they would have known that. Maybe his crash wasn't related.
His crash couldn't have been related. And I'll tell you, the reason
he was using
a Windows RT tablet.
Right.
Windows RT doesn't have Hyper-V, and it certainly doesn't have the Intel.
So it's a different issue.
Chip.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Let us see. Now, do you want to talk about, I don't know. I get these notes. I don't know how I should follow them. I don't know what you want me to do. I just...
Leo, you're free to just go nuts and... there you go. He'll be on the floor. You know, he'll be like pre-planning on the ball by the time this thing's up.
Are we still... what is the fallout after the Surface and Apollo announcements?
Is there
a
fallout?
It's funny. I don't know if there was fallout, but this week over at ZDNet, they made me do this online debate with Jason Perlow. And
really?
They had me defending Microsoft this week. That's a rarity. Okay, so I was the one who had to say why the Surface was so awesome.
Cool.
And I found it surprisingly easy to argue that case. I got to say, even though there's a ton of things we still don't know about the Surface, like the price and the battery life and many other things, I want one. I totally want one. And the keyboard is like what is making me want one of these things. When I really look at why do I want it? Yes.
Well, wait, hold on. But do you want the Pro version or the RT version?
I could use the RT version because I don't run a lot of Win32 apps. So I totally could use it. And if it has better battery life, that's what's going to
But what about that key? So I could be wrong, but maybe you can mix and match these things. But I thought that the RT version came with that flatter keyboard that didn't have the tactile feedback. And then,
I think
is
you
that
can
not
mix
the case?
And match.
You think you can,
I
have
the impression you could mix and match, yeah.
Okay.
So, you have the choice of the flat touch keyboard that is more like a giant trackpad with keys, right? And then you also have the tactile touch keyboard, which I would guess would be more for me because I'm a fast touch typist. But I want to try everything. And I'm really very bullish about this.
Mary Jo's going to skip Windows 8 on her laptop, but she's going to go Windows RT.
I am. Yes, that's what I'm going to do. Yeah,
that's kind of an interesting contradiction there.
Yeah, no, it's
good.
You
know why?
I like it.
It is because you know, the reason I've been not bullish about Windows 8 for sure is I just felt like the hardware is not really made for this. And what I really like, this is not a compliment to Microsoft, and they're going to be mad that I say this. But so what else is new? But the reason I liked what I saw of the Surface is it hides Windows 8 to me. It makes it more palatable because it's not so in your face. It like lets you use the keyboard and kind of get around when you don't necessarily want to go and touch a laptop.
It is supposed to get out of the way. That's the whole, point, right, of that stuff.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful, and I want one. If anybody has,
you don't want a Windows 8 Pro tablet? You're not interested in that?
Mary Jo writes, I believe, in something like Emacs, right? Or what, some text editor. So
I beg your pardon.
Notepad.
It's VI.
But I mean, that's amazing, right? So you could get away with, of course it comes with Word anyway, but I mean, it's very interesting.
You write in Notepad?
I do.
How do you publish it?
I cut and paste from Notepad into our CMS system.
It's got to be a better way.
That's horrible.
That's fantastic.
But you know why? Because I don't write. If I were writing another book like Paul's doing, I wouldn't write in Notepad, obviously.
Well, you wouldn't be allowed to. You'd probably have to write in Word, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, this is like Neal Stephenson probably does something like this. Of course, he uses
fountain pen.
Does he?
Yes, and a literal Notepad. He writes on legal paper. I know I saw the manuscript for Cryptonomicon at the Rock and Roll Hall Museum up in Seattle.
There's a curve that you go through, right, with guys like that where they're like, they're so cool. Oh, he's nuts.
He's using a fountain pen. He's
like
insane.
You reach the apex and then you just go careening like a roller coaster over the top and just keep going toward like cuckoo land.
All of us are that way. You
know? Yeah, probably.
When you really get down to it, when you finally realize who we are, it's not what you thought.
Yeah, you don't idolize people.
No. If you go to, Paul Allen's Experience Music Project in Seattle, there's a science fiction section. And in there, I can't remember which Neal Stephenson novel, but they've got the full manuscript, which is about 4 foot high.
Yeah. It's going to be Cryptonomicon or something.
Something like that. And then all the fountain pens, he uses those Pilot disposable fountain pens, and there's like 80 boxes of them that he used to write it. I love that.
I wish that I could respect that or look up to
but
that.
But it's just crazy.
Whatever, but I think it's nuts. It's just nuts.
Well, you'd hate to look in my closet here in New York because I still take all my notes on paper. And my closet is full of boxes of notebooks dating back probably like 20 years.
No, but that's because you're a true journalist. No, you're not a digital journalist. You're a real journalist.
Do we ever share the story of the greatest journalist story I ever heard, which involved a pad of paper? This was a Bill. You might have been present for this when I was told this story. I think Neil Cherney told me this story. I'm not going to say who did this, maybe out of just in case. This is told in confidence. But this was the greatest single journalistic story I've ever heard in my life. So it involved this guy interviewing someone from Microsoft, and he had a pad of paper and his pen, and he was spinning his pen in the air like this as the guy was talking. So, of course, the guy's talking, but he keeps looking up at the guy who's interviewing him. And finally, he says, what the hell are you doing with the pen? And you know, this is what the guy said to him. This is so beautiful. He said, I'm waiting for you to say something interesting so I can write it down. Can you imagine doing that to someone?
That's awesome.
I put my pen down. Told me I do that. Like, when I'm bored with what you're telling me, I just put my pen down.
Right.
So
my version of that is I type, right? And people, I just had a meeting today. Somebody commented on this. People will always say, wow, you type really quickly. But the flip side of that is you can tell when I'm getting bored because I don't type so quickly.
No.
And so I'm like, click, 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 click. And then I just start listening. And then like, we're losing Paul. But I would never insult them like that. I just thought that was
just go like just, this. Just beautiful. Tap your fingers on the keyboard as if you're typing.
Oh, are you still talking over there?
What? No, so you have those are the old reporter's notepads, the thin long ones, Mary Jo, in your closet?
I use all different, like, here's one.
I think we talked about this once, didn't we?
Mary Jo's a throwback. This is crazy.
Oh, yeah, like a steno pad.
Yeah, like this one. Don't read those notes.
In the old days of print journalism, and I remember this when even like when I was at NBC, they said keep your note. Either don't take notes, or if you take notes, you must keep them in case there's a lawsuit
what if
or a dispute.
Do you think you'll switch to the pen and the tablet if you get a Windows RT tablet?
I would like to try to make myself use OneNote because then you can record your interviews and have
get the
your
audio
notes
and your
them.
Notes.
I know, that would be pretty awesome, but. Yeah, I might try that. It'll just be a total break with everything I've done in the past. See, I'm people
and
think
if you
I'm
were compulsive like me, you would spend the next 2 years scanning in all of your paper notes so you could, have them.
I've got them uncatalogued and categorized. We've used OCR.
And now that I've done that, I'm going to kill myself because my life has
my life is now over. Wow. Anything new from either of those announcements? Windows Phone 8, anything to say? I didn't see, and I think you guys were right, a big reaction from consumers saying, oh, rats, we can't upgrade our existing Windows phones. I didn't see all of it. I thought maybe there'd be more of that.
Right. I mean, obviously those guys come out of the wood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Of course they do.
But, because we're the only 3%. 3%, right. You only heard 3% of all people saying
lot.
It.
Right.
Yeah, the answer that you are part of a very small crowd and that's why they're really not doing it is not what anyone ever wants to hear. It's a business. It's like when your favorite player gets traded to another sports team and you get the quote from everyone who says, oh, yeah, you know, we have to, we're reminded it's just a business, you know.
Somebody was raving about Windows 7 8, though. They really liked the gutter or whatever.
The removal of the gutter.
The removal of the gutter, that's it.
Yep. Sure. And that's, yeah. It's weird because there's people who try to parse what Microsoft says. And if you look very carefully at what they said about 7.8, they're very specific about what it was. And then there are people who want to, well, there's going to be more than that. They can't, they're going to be doing more than that. You know, surely some of the apps that are not dependent on the new hardware will be coming to the rest of us. And it's like, not really. And,
I keep seeing people report that like it's a fact, right? Like, yeah, no, but you know, you guys only know about the UI, but there's more. And every time I ask Microsoft, I'm like, is there more? And they just say, we didn't.
Listen, I was in a room with 20 journalists. We asked them very specifically, is this all there is? Yeah. And they said, yeah, it's three things. I mean, it's like the, you know, the new start screen, the tile capabilities, and then over the air update, you know, but that's it. I mean, I'm sorry. There's no magic curtain that, you know, there's other stuff. Sorry. But I still get those emails all the time. So will DataSmart be included with Windows 7 8? No. So will, you know, this other feature? No. You know, right. Sorry. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Were the bearers bad news
But the Audible app came out. So, I mean, that's like a wash as far as I can tell.
Yeah. You know? And Nokia has been rolling out. I think there were some of the camera extras came out this week.
Play 2 came out this week. Yep.
Right. So it's not like your phone's dead in the water. I see so many people saying, oh, I wasted, you know, $50 or whatever you really paid.
Well, or they'll say, so let me get this straight. My phone is immediately obsolete because they just announced Windows 8, Phone 8. And it's like, well, hold on a second. First of all, Windows Phone 8 is not even out yet. So if that's the point at which your phone becomes obsolete, you get another 3 or 5 months, whatever. But you know, it's your phone doesn't stop working because they release a new phone. I mean, it's still going to do all the stuff it does. Do you find it useful and valuable today? I mean, developers are not going to stop creating apps for it. I mean, for the foreseeable future, it's going to make the most sense to ship those 7 apps that work on both systems. This is not it's not like a hard stop, you know. Windows Mobile.
The other cool thing that Nokia users are getting, one of our listeners is reminding me, is the flip to silence thing. Have you seen that? Like if you get a phone call and you don't. So you get a phone call or notifications and you don't want to have them come to you because you're in a meeting or whatever. You just flip your phone upside down and it silences it.
Oh, proximity sensor.
That's handy.
Yeah. I love that feature on my Android phone.
Yes.
I find that just throwing it across the room achieves the same effect.
That works with all phones.
Yeah.
You know, I think eventually these are all going to merge into ones. Everything's going to do the same thing. There's no, unless they sue each other out of existence, which is also possible.
Or unless anybody goes out of business, hopefully not.
Well, RIM, RIM's getting close. RIM's
actually, you know, I didn't read this story, but I saw the headline that someone from Nokia claimed they actually have a plan B.
Did they?
I don't know if you saw this. I didn't read it.
I wonder what it would be. Migo?
I believe it's called insolvency.
Yeah.
And a massive selling of patents, I believe, would be the... Uh-huh. We're going to go out like Commodore. We're going to move to like an island in the Caribbean and just, you know, sell off the country, the company's assets, which apparently involved a building somewhere in Pennsylvania.
So Mary Jo has the details on upgrading to Windows 8. We talked about downgrading.
Yeah, we did.
Let's talk about
upgrading. This is the opposite.
This is the opposite.
Right. Let's talk about the opposite. So, yes, one of my trusty sources passed along some information to me about what Microsoft's plans are for people who are on XP, Vista, and Windows 7 in terms of how they're going to be able to upgrade to Windows 8 and how much you're going to be able to preserve when you move over. So I detailed this on my site today. You know, the best case scenario, obviously, is going to be Windows 7. You get to preserve a lot of things when you move from the starter, the home basic, the home premium editions over to Windows 8, which is the consumer version. If you're a business user, you'll be able to move almost everything over also from Windows 7, the business versions, to Windows 8 Pro. And the one that people seem the most surprised about is XP. You know, a lot of people thought you can't move anything. It's just going to be clean install or nothing. But I guess there is going to be a way to move from XP with at least Service Pack 3, but only your personal files and data will be maintained, nothing else. Well, not your settings.
So it is a clean install, but you just keep the data.
Yeah, I think It's that's migration, the, I think, is how they would describe it.
Yeah, it's
that.
More migration.
That's the way to do it, I think. Yeah.
True.
You know what that means? I'm going to have to install XP again. So you think I feel bad about Windows 7? Wait till I do that.
Woo-hoo.
Just to test.
Right. So the question everybody's asking me, and I don't know if Paul knows, I haven't seen anybody say this answer to this, but is there going to be any way to move from Windows 8 release preview or Windows 8 consumer preview straight to RTM?
I'll tell you what they told me, which was they have not done that in the past, but they are looking at doing something because the language that you use here in your article about this upgrade plan, it maps to their new language for describing what used to be called clean install, upgrade, and migration, right? So now they're calling what now they just call it upgrade with personal files and applications and settings, right? There's different levels of that. And that is the new Windows 8 language. And so I think the way they described it was they're hoping that they can at least do that XP or Vista style thing where you get your data, maybe get your system settings, but it's not going to be an upgrade. It won't be an in-place upgrade. And so you'll have to reinstall applications. And that would be the best case scenario. So worst case is they've never offered this before is what I was told. You kind of go into this knowing you're using a pre-release OS and you're going to want to do a clean install pretty much, I would think, anyway. But what they told me at the release preview timeframe was that they were looking at essentially what I would call migration, I guess is how they used to describe it. So maybe we could say a Vista or XP style upgrade, I guess, to use their new language.
Better than nothing, right?
Yes, definitely. Right. Like Windows Phone 7, 8.
Yeah. Better than
A sharp stick in an eye, in the eye. Maybe that could be their marketing phrase for Windows 7, 8. Windows Phone 7, 8. Probably not.
Yeah, maybe not.
not a winner. That's why I'm not marketing.
Not a winner. Not a winner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. So did you guys watch any of the Google
I/O? Yeah, I watched a lot of it, actually. I didn't watch any today.
Well, you didn't miss anything today.
Well, I watched the end of your show, which involves skydiving.
Skydiving. And then, but they did mention the Google Compute Engine, which I think would be of interest to Mary Jo because it's an Azure competitor.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, let's start with that. What do you think, Mary Jo?
Okay.
Yeah, so we don't know a whole ton about this yet. There's a Google blog post up about it. And so what it sounds like is, so I should step back. Google App Engine, which is what Google had in the cloud already, is their platform as a service play. It's really very different from what Azure has been to date. But that's when you say to Google, what do you have in the cloud? They used to say Google App Engine. That's our pass, right? Platform as a service. So today what they announced was called Google Compute Engine. And what they're doing is basically what Amazon does, and now what Microsoft is going to be doing with Azure, which is turning it into an infrastructure as a service play. So the idea is you have virtual machines. In Google's case, you are probably going to run Linux on them, and you can host your apps up there in these virtual machines. And so Microsoft's doing this too. This is what they announced a couple weeks ago when they talked about bringing the new persistent virtual machine to Azure. They're letting you do the same.
This is essentially what Amazon does with EC2, right? Their Elastic Computing.
Right.
Okay.
They let you host, Windows and Windows apps.
It's a virtual computer that you can use. You can use multiple cores. It sounded like that Google's only allowing Linux.
Mm-hmm. And Microsoft's allowing Windows, obviously, too.
And
so
Linux.
You can host SharePoint, SQL Server.
And Amazon, I think, is a platform agnostic. I think you could put anything on there, as I remember.
You can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, it's in preview form, just like the new Azure Bits are. The new Persistent VM is also in preview form, or soon will be, for Windows Azure. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I'd love somebody to try hosting a Linux app in both platforms and say, hey, which one's better? Which one are you going to prefer? Because we don't really know yet how robust either of them are, because they don't really exist yet.
Google just published pricing for this. I'd love somebody to do some calculations. They did a demo with how many cores? 600,000 cores. Yeah. And I'm just looking at the pricing here. The price per hour of 8 cores is $1.16. So 300,000 cores is going to cost you a lot of money per hour.
But how many hours would you need such a thing?
Right. Maybe a few seconds. Yeah, right. I presume that they have.
Yeah, that's the thing about these, right? You spin up something and you spin it down. You know, and Microsoft, I got to say, they've been taking a lot of knocks for their Azure pricing over the past couple of years. And they've been dropping the price, drop. So I'm going to be surprised if Google comes in way under Azure, because they're already pretty cheap. They're getting cheaper by the minute because they keep cutting the price to make sure you can compete with Amazon. So.
Right. If you want to run the, this is the article from extremetech.com. If for $2 million a day, your company can run the third fastest supercomputer in the world. That's the 600,000 core. $2 million a day. That's not bad.
Is that Sebastian who wrote that?
Sebastian Anthony.
How dare he appear on our podcast?
Okay. Happen to know him, I guess.
I think I owe him some sushi, actually. But yes.
Okay. So he did what I was hoping somebody would do. By the way, that's the more than the math.
The math.
Math is hard. I don't do math. Yep. So that's 96. He's saying, assuming 8-core CPUs, that 770,000 cores they showed is 96,000 machines. EC2 has they say 450,000 machines. So. There's a ways to go. I don't know how big Azure is.
This is way bigger than the computer I just bought.
Yeah. And lots cheaper. I mean, expensive than the computer. Yours was lots cheaper.
Hopefully,
So that was one of the announcements. Yesterday, there was a lot more to talk about.
Yeah. So I think I'm writing a story about this now, about Google Play, which is kind of the new version of Android Marketplace, right? Or Android Market. But they beefed it up. And so I would say as of today, they're very close to what, or almost identical to what Apple and Amazon in particular offer, and have a little bit more than what Microsoft offers to the tune of books and periodicals, for example.
Right.
But it's interesting, you know, offering a $200 tablet obviously is something that takes on the Kindle Fire. But I think the big story is the ecosystem play here, that really what we're looking at are, I guess it's four companies, right? So Apple, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft all have these competing ecosystems. They all work across a variety of devices, mostly mobile devices, tablets, phones. Google's stuff is interesting because it doesn't really work on PCs, but it will work on the web. And so you can watch movies or TV shows on the web, for example. And I think that's kind of the big deal. You know, I find it interesting that they talked about this Nexus Q thing, which is like another set-top box, and didn't talk at all about Google TV. And it makes me wonder. It was always kind of weird. Like, Google TV was sort of Android, not quite Android. Maybe this is their Android replacement for Google TV. It's kind of unclear.
This thing, the Q, to my knowledge, requires an Android phone. You can't. It's not a standalone device. You have to have an Android device.
For like a remote almost, or a way to control the playback.
Yeah, I mean.
The one cool thing that they did with the Q that doesn't justify the $300 price tag at all is the ability to put multiple units in your house and have the music that you're playing sync to all, sort of like a Sonos. Right?
Yeah.
I think that's a cool thing. And I know guys who have been trying to do something like this using like Microsoft products, for example. You know, and they've had to go like, well, there's like a Wi-Fi thing you can put on your stereo and different approaches to doing that. And assuming that this Google thing works, it looks fairly seamless. But it's still $300 a shot. I mean, even Sonos, you know, probably, which has always been kind of expensive, probably comes in pretty close for a
Sonos multi-room
Connect
setup. Which I purchased is $350. That does the same thing as a single Q. And
but then, it works across multiple platforms. I mean, you know.
Oh, it's so much more than the Q does. I mean, I can. Yeah. And then it also, you'd buy the speakers. Generally, what they do is they sell the speakers as the units. And this thing is a speakerless amplifier, basically. So it's a little different play, but
Interesting. But it's cool looking. So people are kind of, you know, getting excited about it. I think that the tablet is, it's weird. It's so Kindle Fire-esque. You know, it's the same thing. It's Wi-Fi only. There's no 3G. Or 4G or whatever. This is none of that. It's not a computer. It's a consumption device. This thing is designed to consume Google Play services. That's all it is. Just like the Kindle Fire is very much designed to consume Amazon services. I mean, either one of them can do other stuff, of course.
Well, but I'll say one thing that's different is this is quad core. It's got 16. It's got much powerful, more powerful GPU.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that's really actually a huge deal. I mean, it's
price it is.
Right. So I don't the Amazon thing is 1024 by 600. This is 1280 by what, 800 probably.
Yeah. Yep.
A little bit better, a little bump. It's 9 months later. For the same amount of memory, storage, you get the same, same price. The Google one, by virtue of just being newer, has newer componentry. I would expect Amazon to come out with newer componentry yet again.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a Fire too, and it'll, I would guess, be competitive.
I ordered one because I want to compare it to the Fire. To me, it's not a revolution over the Fire. It's just an evolution, and it's Google services, which are a little less mature than what Amazon does. So we'll see. For example, you can actually get captioning on some Google Play movies, but to my knowledge, not on any of their TV shows, which is kind of weird. Yeah, it's very strange, and it's hard to know. They don't have anything good in the UI on the device to tell you that it's there. If you go to the website, you can actually see it if you know where to look. It's just a little less mature. I think they're going to get it there. But I think what this really was the Google Play kind of coming out party, where they've reached a rough functional parity, or I don't know, functional is maybe not the right word, but a rough parity with iTunes and App Store and with the Amazon stuff.
We're getting, we have a couple of sevens and Qs, and we'll get those for first look, not a real review because we'll have just received it, but a first look later tonight on Before You Buy.
Oh, nice.
5 o'clock. Yeah,
cool.
So we'll at least be able to hold it in my hand.
What you need to do is get someone to bring in a Fire, because and
I have a
them.
Fire. You're right. We can
bring it in because
side to side. Yeah,
the Google Fire, the Amazon Kindle Fire doesn't have a front facing camera. It doesn't have a back facing camera.
Right.
It's a little thick, a little heavy. Maybe this device, it certainly doesn't get 9 hours of video playback battery life, I can tell you that. So I'm curious, it'd be interesting to compare the two physically as well.
I don't know if you noted this. They did talk about the fact that they can use the front-facing camera on the 7 or an iPad. They demoed it with an iPad in a Kinect-like way, that it can watch you. And they showed, that was the Cirque du Soleil demonstration. It was so buried that I don't know if it was clear. It was an HTML5.
I caught the end of that. But actually, so
that's kind of interesting. That's a Kinect shot at Kinect, I think.
There was a software story from day one. It was called something like Google Now or Google something. And obviously the problem with Google is this kind of big brother aspect that they have.
They're
it was
creepy.
The feature where you,
yes.
They're creepy. And you would think being Google, you'd want to hide that's what you're doing. But they actually said for this feature, it was the one where
we know what sports team you like based on your previous searches.
No, way worse. No, that's way worse than that. Google knows when you get up.
Right.
Google knows when you go to work.
Right.
Google knows when the bus that you're taking to work is going to be late. Google can tell you that.
That's
and it's like, it's it was a weird way to describe it, because I think there would have been a way that sounded less stalker-like and more beneficial to your life. But it was one of those things where they said, look, you're going to have to opt into it because it's a little weird. But if you're willing to do that, and a lot of people are.
I'll do it. But I do agree that, in fact, when I was watching this, I had the exact same gut reaction. And I said it. I said, I think that Google is a little tone deaf to the creepy aspects of some of this stuff.
They have to be to allow that to come out in some public keynote thing. It was just so weird.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments where I stopped typing because I was taking notes during it. I was like, really?
Your pen started circling the page.
Yeah, Google knows that, do they?
Remember, Microsoft kind of talked about their equivalent to this last year, and they haven't talked about it a lot this year, but they were Steve Ballmer demoed some things last year where he said, you're going to be able to say to your computer, get my itinerary for my trip to Vail. And so, Mike, look how much less creepy Microsoft made that, though.
Right.
That
sounds great. Let's go skiing.
Right. They made it kind of like, we're going to also be able to figure out all your inputs and kind of make sense of what you mean and all the things you need to see when you say that. But
are there people on the street with newspapers who are actually from Google? They're looking over like he's coming down the street.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing. Yeah.
It's weird. It's just Leo, it's tone deaf. I mean, it's crazy.
I don't think they realize how normal people. Now, it is an I.O., is a developers conference, but it's a public keynote. Everybody, was able to watch this. I'm just waiting for the first story in the Wall Street Journal. Google knows what you're up to.
Google knows when you're asleep.
They know when you're sleeping.
Wait
they know
till
when
you
you're
find
awake.
Out what they're doing then, baby.
They know when you've been bad and good.
Yeah, the other weird reaction I saw this week to some things is when Google announced the 7-inch tablet, I saw so many people saying, well, I guess Microsoft's going to really drop the price of the Surface now. And I'm like, this doesn't compete with the Surface.
The Surface, even the RT version of the Surface, is a computer. Okay, it's a full functioning, it does a lot of stuff. Yeah. It's more than an iPad.
Really? You would categorize it as more than an iPad?
Because it's an iPad plus Mac OS X.
It's a PC.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It's more than an iPad. That's what I mean.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's a PC and tablet clothing.
Right.
Windows RT version.
Right. I mean, we can quibble over the strategy, but Microsoft makes this thing, two things, that are a computer plus a tablet. I mean, it's two things.
I don't know if they, if that got through to me. So that, I mean, I thought they were making a tablet.
Okay, they are making a tablet. But I mean, I guess the point is, at the beginning of the range, we have phones, which are 5 inches or less. And then we have these 7-inch tablets, which are just consumption. That's all they are. They want you to buy their services. That's all this is about. And then we move into computer.
At Surface announcement, I think it was Sanofsky who said, these are tablets that function as PCs and PCs that function as tablets. Like, they're trying to blur that line because they're the ones who keep saying over and over, Microsoft does, tablets are just PCs. This was the first time I felt like they kind of proved that could be true, maybe.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I do think this,
Paul was asking me today, he's like, so where's the Barnes & Noble Nook tablet that Microsoft's working on? Because that would be the competitor to the 7-inch tablet.
Yes, it would. And actually, it's the one thing Microsoft would have to do to complete the picture on the services that Apple, Amazon, and Google now offer, because Microsoft doesn't have books or periodicals. You can add them very easily. I mean, you could install the Nook software on a tablet. You could install the Amazon Kindle software. You could get Google Play. You could not get Google, Apple iBooks, because they're only on iOS. But you have a choice, right? And that's one of the benefits of the PC, of course. But I think Microsoft, you want a soup to nuts kind of thing. And that's the one area where Microsoft doesn't have it. And I think that was the point of the Nook partnership.
Right.
To offer that stuff.
I mean.
Yeah.
So there is a Nook partnership. And they were expected to say something about Barnes & Noble last week. They didn't.
Right.
Is that announcement still to come?
Maybe.
Yeah, presumably. I mean, and maybe that comes from the Nook Co. or whatever they're calling it. I mean, or for Barnes & Noble, who knows? And it could be anything from an overt, this is Windows RT, to we're announcing a new tablet and they don't really say it and people figure out that's what it really is. It's hard to say how they'll present it. Who knows?
But I'm sure they're going to build it.
Right.
We don't know.
So, why would we know that? We don't know anything. So, thus we are qualified to do this podcast. So, my expectation is what we're going to see is a low-end RT tablet that will have a 7-inch screen. And, it won't be, maybe not the greatest office.
There does seem like there will be, even Apple is expected now to do a 7-inch. It seems like there are some now starting to be some demarcations where you got.
I really feel like that is the ideal size for watching movies on a plane or whatever.
When I got the Galaxy 7. Yeah. A year and a half ago or something, I thought this is
made one. I would have owned one by now. Right. I mean, and they don't. But not that, don't get me wrong. The iPad is not humongous. I mean, but the problem with the iPad is that it's really expensive, And now that there is some competition in this, $200 range, it really changes things.
Wow.
And, we'll see. We'll see how it does. We'll see how it is, too. You'll see.
I'll
ordered
see
one, but I won't. Yeah.
Well, Anand has published the first benchmarks on Anand Tech, and they say it's the fastest tablet to run JavaScript, faster even than the new iPad, according to SunSpider JavaScript benchmark.
Okay.
So it's that's the Tegra 3. The Tegra 3 is a nice.
What I would want on this tablet is I'd want a Kindle app that was optimized for that size of display.
That? I'm sure there is that.
Sure there will be. And then honestly, the Google Play. If you think about it, you're going on a trip. You want to rent a couple of movies. Who cares where they come from? If you have a Google device, it might make sense to get Google Play. Maybe the Amazon App Store will be available as well.
Most people who have Android already have a credit card registered with Google because they buy apps in the Play Store. Right?
That's part of the thing I'm writing. I mean, one of the nice things about the Google stuff is they use Google Wallet. It's Yep. Really kind of a seamless experience. And they also have a nice thing where you could buy something or rent something from one place and then go watch it somewhere else. It's just kind of attached to your account. So if you were to rent a movie and you went on a trip and never actually watched it, you could go home, log onto YouTube on your TV or whatever, Xbox, and you could watch it there.
That's cool.
Oh, that's actually really nice.
Yeah. And they're going to do that with the Q. I didn't realize this, but it was explained to me that if you go over to a friend's house and they have a Q, I don't think anybody's going to have a Q, but let's say your friend has a Q. You can go over there and you have your Android phone and you've already licensed a movie. You can play it on their TV and then their stereo through the Q on your account. The movie's on me tonight.
Did anyone discuss whether the Q thing was named after the Star Trek character?
It is the letter Q. Either that or isn't Q the gadget guy in James Bond?
Yes.
Somebody pointed out, I think it was Andy Anatko, that the Q, which is that ball with a glowing LED ring, looks exactly like the force training ball that Luke Skywalker used in Star Wars Episode 3.
With the same kind of gutter around the middle.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be cool if it could fly? And then wouldn't it be cool if you had a lightsaber? And then really wouldn't it be cool if you could just go...
And then people would be like, connect.
I got a lightsaber. Take that.
You could detect an iPhone in the room and then shoot that guy.
Now, do you guys want to mention Fortaleza versus Google Glass? Or do you really? Is there...
Both of these things are crazy, but sure.
I know. They're both pretty nutty. Yeah. Because remember Fortaleza, that's the code name for the Microsoft glasses.
From this two-year-old document.
Right. From a two-year-old presentation, right? So... But supposedly some kind of an Xbox 3D kind of glasses, right? They're not like these Google glasses, which seem more like cameras and microphones and
mounted in the show in Fortaleza 3D.
Yeah. I don't know. It was weird because on Twitter, I saw so many people when they showed that going, I can't wait to have these. Oh, man, this is going to be so awesome. And I was like, you know what? This is what separates real geeks from people like me.
Yeah.
Because I just see that and go, huh?
Yeah, that's where I draw the line. We're done.
Well, look at 3D TV in the home. You know, I mean, I don't think people really wear those glasses very often. Glasses are not a good experience in general.
Oh, mine are okay.
Well, but you don't want to wear glasses on your glasses, do you?
It's better than not having them.
No, I do not.
That's why I hate 3D movies, because I have to wear glasses on my glasses.
Right. And they're talking to people who are manufacturing glasses and sunglasses, and they're going to see if they can build this into them.
I don't know. Special
This stuff will come out just in time for us not to need glasses for 3D, I think.
That's right when it'll appear. Yep. In the future.
It's the future. You can tell I'm wearing glasses.
The future. Speaking of the future, Tango...
Or is that the past?
It's the present.
Leo, you're usually really kind of excellent at the segue, but I have to say...
There's no segue there at all.
It's like the future...
The future tango. Does the future dance the tango, Paul Theroux?
Does the future suck? Because if it does, that will be tango.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, this is a funny item because I don't know if you guys remember this, but when Microsoft finally announced Tango, the update that comes after Mango for Windows Phone, they would never use the word Tango. Even though that was the code name and they had used it all along inside, nobody would say the word Tango. So now when you ask Microsoft, so are these updates you just are pushing out now Tango? They said, there's nothing called Tango.
Tango? What's that?
Yeah, which is so, come on, guys.
What is this update you're referring to? I've never heard of this.
Yes.
But they are.
This is 8773, which just got published to the Windows Phone History page yesterday.
And it's coming out soon, right? Now?
It's coming out. Yeah, some people say they already have it on their phones, actually.
Yeah, it depends on what phone you have, I guess.
It does. And who your carrier is and where you are in the world, because it seems like people who are outside the U.S. all have it way before we have it. But
this is the carrier.
What's the bill number?
8773.
That's like 3 million numbers higher than the one I have. Why is my phone out of date, Mary Jo?
You're on Verizon? No, you're not.
No, I'm on AT&T.
8107 was the disappearing keyboard fix.
Yep.
You have that one, don't you, Paul?
I have 80... Wait.
This is the new geek cool, by the way.
8112.7.
Used to be, do you have Pikachu, a yellow Pikachu or a blue Pikachu? Now it's,
do you have 8733?
I look at my version and it laughs at me.
Yeah, I think 8773, which just went up on the Windows Phone History page yesterday, might be Tango, although I can't actually force anyone from Microsoft to say that.
Say
but
it.
Say right. it. But what's so in
what's,
that one?
What's the favorite question about Tango, right? Have you gotten these questions?
What is this the favorite is my, question?
I've gotten this from many people. So let me get this straight. Tango takes away features from Windows Phone.
Right.
So if I accept this update, am I going to lose capabilities? Like, will I not be able to play Plants vs. Zombies? Will, you know, will a gyro stop working or whatever it is, you know? Yeah. The answer is no. It doesn't take stuff away.
Although there are some apps that can't run.
Right now the chat room's all upset because they're talking about blue Pikachus.
You
see what you've done?
I'm so sorry I derailed that one.
it's like winding up a small child.
So really, the only thing different in 7.8 is you get this nice new icon tile thing and the gutter's gone.
No, that's actually
That's 7.8. That's not Tango?
Oh, crap.
No.
Actually, it's a good question. So does 7.8 have an O name? Do we know that? Why has no one thought to ask this question?
We have not been able to crack the code name of 7.8.
Oh.
But Joe Belfiore told us at one point that Tango would be the last one in the series of Windows Phone updates that had a code name ending in the letter O. He did say that.
Fandango.
It's not Fandango, people.
Why did they? Why? What was the point? Has anyone ever explained that?
No.
Here we go.
No one has ever.
Rango. Bingo.
So
bango,
yeah, 8107
bongo.
Disappearing keyboard fix. This one that came out this week, 8773 has the multiple part text messaging attachment thing, the SIM card enhancement. Import the SIM card contacts to your phone.
Oh yeah.
And then they say other quality improvements. Many other improvements
to Windows
Phone.
Bug fixes.
Are you sure about the SIM card thing? I thought that was already there. Is it a way to copy contacts to the SIM card?
You can now export phone contacts to a SIM card.
To a SIM card. Okay, because the original version of Windows Phone 7 offered import from a SIM card.
Yep, this is both now export and import.
Gotcha.
So we think this is the Tango updates, not the part of Tango that's that's being loaded on new phones, but these updates that are coming to people who don't have the Tango operating system, we think.
Maybe we should blow Leo's mind and tell him that there's more than one Tango.
No, I can't handle the truth.
You can't. Yeah, that was confusing too, the two Tangos. Well, there were three Tangos if you count the two Tangos.
But Microsoft says there never was a Tango, so maybe.
Exactly.
It's not Tango. This
the
is not the
Tango they acknowledge is the Tango that's the VoIP thing, right? That's a third-party VoIP product. Called Tango.
Right. I have that.
And a drink in the UK.
Tang is called Tango?
Yes.
Is it Tang?
No, it's not. It's like an orange soda drink, I think. Mm. Actually, it might come in multiple flavors.
I think it does.
Well, could you look into that and find out?
I will. I'll
do
that right
someone
now.
Find
Just want to know, that's all.
Tango.
Inquiring minds want to know. At least there's something we know. Okay, tango.co.uk. Let's see if it's working here. I got to go full screen. Hey, there it is. Whoa!
That's just so awful.
That is a nightmare.
Yep.
Apparently, it's an old lady doing the frug, and then all of a sudden, she pulls her shirt open, and
she got tangoed.
She's got tangoed. It's wow, Paul, can I thank you for... I launched
I understand
Windows
that this,
8 for this.
I just wanted to say goodbye to everybody.
Is this family friendly is the question. I don't think it's family unfriendly.
Yeah, it's just not friendly, period. That's what it is.
makes me thirsty. All right, let's... I guess that's the point.
Yeah, I guess. It's got to be the most vile substance on earth, though. You know, it's got to be this awful orange cola.
Between the two ads that I've seen now, I have no inclination whatsoever to buy this. You know what Microsoft did buy, though? Yammer for $1 billion.
There it is. You're back, baby.
So we broke this story way back when. We knew this was going to happen, and now it's true.
Yep.
And it is $1 billion, really?
Yeah. 1.2 billion.
What the hell? Oh, what's a couple hundred million between friends? what do you think? What's the story here?
I don't get it.
To me, the weirdest part when they had a conference call where they explained, you know, here's why we did this, because so many people were saying, why are you doing this? And they announced the intention to kind of let Yammer be itself. Like,
let Yammer be Yammer. Leave Yammer alone.
Right. Yeah, that explains why they spent $1 billion on it. Why would you want to have any say over its future direction? Just give them the money.
Well, it was weird. It was weird too because when they announced it, if you read the press release, it never said they were going to integrate any of the Yammer enterprise social networking technology with Microsoft products. So I'm like, so they bought it and they're just going to let it kind of go on its merry way.
Like Skype. This is what they did with Skype, right?
No, but then on the conference call, they said, oh, yeah, we are going to let it continue as a standalone entity, Yammer, but we're also going to integrate it with SharePoint, as you'd expect, because that also has enterprise social networking in it, and also with the Dynamics CRM product, and they're going to integrate it with Skype, they said. So that's
pretty interesting.
So yeah, Microsoft kept emphasizing they bought Yammer because they're really good at getting customers to join through a viral kind of means, and Microsoft doesn't really do that with their products. So they paid $1.2 billion for viral technology, I guess.
The Verge said there was a bidding war with Oracle, and isn't that what happened with Instagram? There was a imputed that there had been a bidding war, and the price got driven up, so Facebook had to pay $1 billion.
I wonder, though, you remember everybody was saying, everybody said at first when Microsoft bought Skype that there was a bidding war for Skype, but then it turns out, nope, there wasn't actually.
There's no excuse.
In fact, there was sort of a rumor that Google at least had looked at them and said, platform is terrible. Right. We're going to do something else.
Wow.
So, Yammer, my understanding about Yammer is basically that SharePoint has social networking stuff built into it very nicely. And I guess Yammer already integrates with SharePoint, so I don't know. Maybe
they bought the customers. That's the argument for Instagram.
Yeah,
is it?
And Yammer has quite. What did you say, Mary Jo?
5 million. 5 million seats, I think. Yeah,
quite a few, and quite a few companies, thousands of companies.
Yeah. I think the figure was 85% of the Fortune 500.
Wow.
Yeah. They have the companies Microsoft doesn't always have. Like, they both are in the Fortune 500, but the people who use Yammer tend to be like a lot of startups, who Microsoft is dying to get in the fold, right? So
who was it we had on the show? Somebody. I think it was Tim. It was Tim Stevens, the CEO of chief editor in chief of Engadget, who said they briefly tried Yammer, and it was just too noisy. And it just didn't add anything to the conversation. It just added a lot of more conversation.
Sounds like the internet.
Yeah.
It's like using Twitter.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's Twitter for the enterprise, right?
Yeah. It's like it's more like Chatter, right? Like which Salesforce has, or it's more, kind of more like the news feed, almost like more like Facebook than Twitter in a way, right?
Yep. Actually, I looked at social networking features in SharePoint some time ago and asked readers about that, and was really surprised to hear how many initiatives were underway in different companies that these guys worked for, and that this was more popular than I would have thought. Because from my perspective on the outside, I look at this and I think, well, you're already participating in Facebook and maybe other social networking services. Do you really want another one? And that the big difference here is that, publicly available consumer-oriented social networking services are obviously about chatting and
they're
public, right? So when you have something like this inside your company, what you want to do is give people who may not work near each other physically the chance to communicate and then kickstart projects and get work done. And so actually the point of it is a little different, whereas, maybe you waste time on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and the time you spend on Yammer or SharePoint or whatever. Is work oriented.
It's an acknowledgement of the fact that the businesses are going to be distributed more and more, and a way for businesses who are different, locale with employees in different locales, a way for them to kind of operate efficiently is going to be valuable. $1.2 billion valuable to a company that already has technology that's very similar. I don't know.
No, there's like a tech acquisition boom.
Yeah. Oh boy, I wish I'd had a startup.
You just kind of do have a startup. You never know.
You never know. I'm available for $1 billion.
Yeah.
I'll do it for half that.
$1 billion would solve a lot of problems. That's all I'm saying.
I promise to give 10% to charity. Does that help?
Sure.
Office 365 is 1 year old. So is Tom Merritt and Google Plus.
Wow. Yeah. Everyone's birthday.
Everybody's birthday. I like Office 365. Does the world like Office 365? Is it doing well?
Mary Jo, I need to ask you a question.
Yes.
Did I write the loss of Tom Rizzo at Google originally in this?
No.
Did I write that?
I did.
No,
I wrote. That was bad. It was my mistake. Added, it's Amazon.
Are you sure it was your mistake?
It was my mistake.
You're right that it's Amazon, but I thought it was Google too. I actually made that mistake.
You copied me. You copied my tweet.
So who's Tom Rizzo? Who's Tom? who are you talking about?
I copied you. I see.
You copied my tweet, my erroneous tweet.
No, I made the same mistake. I thought I also...
I retweeted it too. Everybody retweeted it.
I know. So Tom Rizzo was a longtime Microsoft guy. Man, he'd been on so many products. SQL Server. What else was he on? Yeah, he was on like everything. Yep. Yeah. Really outspoken guy. Really, he was like Microsoft guy. Yeah. Go-to guy for when you needed to zing the competition. That was Tom Rizzo.
Oh, interesting.
He was awesome at it.
He was the pit bull.
He was a soundbite machine.
He was. And so where does he go? Amazon to work on the cloud.
Well, thank God it wasn't Google.
I know. I thought it was Google. Like, that would have been
he spent the last 12 months just dumping on Google.
He did. Know? He did.
Was he the guy who did those, the Gmail man? Yeah.
No, I don't think he did that. But, I mean, he was just very outspoken in a way that Microsoft usually isn't. And, really aggressive.
Like you want somebody.
Yeah, no, that's why we loved him. And and then he left. A traitor.
Just shows you. It's all for show.
A lot of Microsoft guys are ending up at Amazon.
I know. The reason we're talking about him right now is because his last job was he was the zinging guy on Office 365, right?
Yeah.
So he was,
you could use Google Apps if you wanted to use a toy, or you could use Office 365. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, at least Amazon doesn't have a online office solution.
Yeah, yet.
Right. Sure. And at least it wasn't Google Apps. That's where I thought he went. And I was that's like the worst possible case.
Been
bad.
That would have been tough. Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. So he's gone. Office 365 turned one because they launched it last June, right? And Paul and I are both among those who are frustrated that we cannot get a sales figure out of Microsoft for how many seats of Office 365
have
sold.
You think this would have been
the
ideal time to announce this, right? So in other words, TechEd comes and goes, nothing. TechEd UK or TechEd Europe this week, nothing. Office 365, they literally post about this 1 year anniversary. Nothing. They have mentioned some major companies that are using it. They mentioned some major educational institutions that are using it. Dartmouth was among them, I believe. But they've never said, this is how many seats, you know? Is it like 17, 18? What are we talking about? Like, we have no idea.
Now, here's the two numbers we know. So last fall, September 2011, Kevin Turner, who's the COO of Microsoft, said, we've sold 5 million seats of Office 365. And that actually was really fast if that number was, in fact, the case.
So
because
the problem,
they launched
what if it's
in
like,
June.
Yeah, so what if it's like 6 million now? Is that bad?
I know. And how do you measure? Is it good or bad? But this week, they announced that some new enterprise customers had licensed Office 365. They announced Lowe's, Hallmark Cards, Japan Airlines. I mean, some big customers. And they said, this group of customers is 350,000 new people. Okay, guys, just give us the number. Like, you're making us guess. And
maybe it's a partner conferences next month. Maybe they're holding it for that.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, but anyways, back to Office for Education. Office 365 for Education is another one of the SKUs. Like, they have a government SKU and they have a dedicated, a standard. So they have all these different SKUs. This is another SKU that goes head-to-head with Google Apps for Education. And they announced earlier this year that they've got three plans, A2, A3, A4. A2 is free for everybody. It's free for students. It's free for the professors. That's their entry-level free plan. And you get Office Web Apps. You get SharePoint Online. And you get a couple other things with it. The other two you license just the way you do Office 365 for a per-user fee per month, and you get more. The more you pay, the more you get. The highest level, you can get a copy of Office Professional Plus included, you know, that people can install on their local PCs. That's plan A4 and A3. You can get it with that.
Just to be clear, though, Microsoft has had an educational offering for years and years called Live at EDU. Yes. And so that was based on the Windows Live stuff, Hotmail, and so forth. And so this is replacing it with one that's based on the Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, you know, the Office 365 stuff. Just so, you know, people don't think that, oh, they're finally getting into this. I mean,
right.
There are millions and millions of people using Live at EDU.
Yep. Yeah, A3, I'm looking up the pricing now. Students, $2.50 per user per month. Faculty and staff, $4.50 per user per month. A4 is $3 per student per month. And faculty and staff, $6. And you get more, like I said, you get more as you go up. Enterprise Voice is A4.
Prices are great, though, actually. I mean,
yeah, they're actually really good because they've got to compete with Google here. And Google's, you know, being very, very competitive in the education space. I mean, Microsoft and Google, if you look back at the press releases, they've been trading like barbs lately. There, a lot of them are about which university went with which solution and one stealing one from the other. So this is a big battleground for the two.
I can't wait to see which way Dedham Middle School goes. The lucrative Dedham Middle School contract.
Yeah, it's a big one. They'll be announcing that soon, I'm sure. Yep. You know, there's so many great battlefields in Europe. There's Waterloo. There's Dunkirk.
Yep.
And then there's the EU versus Microsoft.
Yeah, the good old days.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what stinks about that whole EU thing, though?
What?
That's not even the biggest fine they've ever given out anymore.
It's right? a $1 billion fine.
Well, it was 1.4 altogether because they had other stuff, you know, attached to it. And then I guess they fined Intel a year later and it was like 1.45 or something. So Intel now holds the title. So I'd like to see Microsoft get that back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what they...
Windows 8.
Here's a chance. It's a possibility. We're number one. We're going to take a break when we come back. Paul Theroux, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking Windows. We've got your Windows picks, software, and articles.
Other stuff.
And then the Enterprise Pick of the Week as well. And yes, there's a code name. There's a code name. But first, I've got a code for you. A code blue. When's the last time you checked your backup situation? Hey, if you're a small business and you don't have a disaster plan, you've got a disaster in the making. Even a home user, what's on your laptop? Pictures of your kids, financial records, emails you just can't afford to lose. And a business is even 10 times worse. It could put you out of business. So a Carbonite Online Backup is my choice for home and office. Carbonite Online Backup. It's automatic. It's continuous. Unlimited backup for your computer files. It starts at $59 a year per computer. That's less than $5 a month for everything on your computer. You could try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card, just the offer code Windows, WINDOWS. Your stuff is stored safely off-site, encrypted, so it's secure. Only you control the keys. They also use SSL, so even if you're at an open access spot, it's completely secure. So easy to restore if there's a disaster, but you don't have to wait till disaster because they've got it. You log on to your Carbonite account on any computer. There's your stuff. They have free apps for your smartphones or your iPads. Visit Carbonite.com, offer code Windows, and if you decide after the two-week trial, and I really want you to do the two-week trial, but after the two-week trial, if you decide to stick with it, you'll get 2 bonus months free, 14 months for the price of 12. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite, C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E, Carbonite.com. You can all go there. The site won't go down. They got lots of bandwidth.
It's not like that Tango site.
Not like that Tango site. I think Carbonite could do maybe some ads with strange characters and orange-colored people. It'd be just interesting. Maybe not.
Oompa Loompas.
Oompa Loompa. It looked like a scary, giant, orange Oompa Loompa. Our tip of the week, Mr. Theroux.
Yeah, so rather than having a single tip,
I have many tips.
Many tips. Although, actually, I would throw out that notion of installing Hyper-V on Windows 8 release preview if you're having problems with those system freezes. But one thing I've been doing for the past few weeks, at least, is not quite every day, but almost every day, I write a tip, Windows 8 tip. So if you go to my Windows 8 page, you'll see a bunch of them all in a row, you know, if you scroll down this more. So just all kinds of stuff, just ways to get by, you know, problems that people are typically having, or just finding some stuff that's now in a new location, you know, using some new capabilities, all that kind of stuff. So cool. Lots and lots of stuff in there.
So that's winsupersite.com, and click the link right at the top that says Windows 8, and there's a whole bunch of Windows 8 tips right there.
Just wanted to direct people at that since I've been doing it for a while.
I really should read those. There's a ton of stuff here.
Some good stuff in there.
Yeah. And your software pick of the week. This is weird. What is this?
I know. This is an enterprise pick from Paul.
Wow.
This is a new... I'm horning in on Mary Jo's specialty. Microsoft has a suite of... I'm not sure what to call them. They're not really apps, but solutions for the enterprise called MDOP, the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. A lot of it is based around PC management or virtualization. And if you're familiar with Windows 8, you know that one of the features they have in Windows 8 is this notion of settings sync, so that you have your start page or your desktop and different settings that are all a certain way. And when you log in with that same account on a different computer, all of that stuff propagates to the other computer as well. And so they're adding a tool to MDOP called User Experience Virtualization. Works across Windows 7 and Windows 8. And what it basically is a centralized, managed version of that settings sync. And when used in combination with some other features in Windows, like offline folder support or folder redirection, it gives you that ability to go log on to any PC with your credentials and get all of your custom settings across, you know, your custom wallpaper, the icons there on your desktop, whatever it is, propagated across all your computers. And so it's a way to always have that kind of custom environment that's available. So the beta 2 version of that is out now. This software will be part of a future version of the MDOP sweep. So it's something that's available to volume licensed customers through Software Assurance. Or if you have Windows Intune, you can get MDOP for $1 more per month per user. And that's actually a particularly good deal if you happen to be using MDOP to manage computers in a business of any size. So there you go.
Thank you.
I occasionally, you know, dip the toes.
Mary Jo is fuming.
And do you know Paul and Leo what the code name of UEV was?
No idea.
This isn't my code name pick, but I'll just tell you, it's Park City, because it was developed by the MDOP team, and a lot of them are in Park City, Utah area.
Sounds nice.
How about that?
Got some breaking news. Which we'll cover on Tech News Today in just about an hour. But RIM just had its earnings call, and analysts were expecting a loss of 7 cents a share. It was 30 cents a share. 37 wow. cents
Winning.
A share. 5,000 job cuts. When you lose 37 cents a share, an analyst expects 7.
It's not good.
I'm
not an analyst, but that's my analysis is... That's not good.
Yeah. So, not good news. It is too bad. They also said that they're not going to have... BlackBerry 10 till 2013. So,
they'll be fine. They're fine.
I think everything's going to turn around next year.
That's the right move.
The ongoing competitive environment is impacting our business.
Last year, when we said it would be next year, it's still next year.
their earnings advice for the next quarter is not good either. Ooh, yeah, they're apparently exploring strategic options.
How's Windows Phone looking now, bitch?
Yeah.
Wow. There's no room for number 4. Let's put it that way, hey?
Yeah, that could be. That could be.
Our enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo.
Yes, I'm going to try a Leo-like segue here.
Okay.
In other news that's not necessarily so great, we're going to do a not-so-great enterprise pick of the week for this week. And it's not that I don't like this product or technology, Windows Software Update Services, which people call WSUS. But this week they had a little mishap with WSUS that people may want to be aware about. So, you know, WSUS is how people push patches in the enterprise to users' desktops. And Microsoft accidentally put Skype for Windows in this bunch of patches. And that would have been okay if it was only going to patch Skype for Windows on people who had Skype already installed for Windows. But that's not what happened. This week, they accidentally pushed it to people who didn't have it, and IT managers were freaking out because they don't necessarily want their users to have Skype pushed to their desktop. So there was a huge outcry in the forums, and Microsoft had to put a quick stop on it, which they did. This happened on June 27th. They've already stopped it. You can do a manual sync of WSUS, and it will expire off. But it's just one extra thing that didn't make the IT managers too happy this week. So WSUS, it's my enterprise pick of the week, but not because of a good a good news kind of a thing. Well, sad.
How about your code name? There's good news there.
There is. Little Rock is the code name of the week. And I'm going to give a shout out here to somebody who found it, which, whose name is Manon Kakar. I think I'm pronouncing his last name right. He has a good blog called Being Manon, MANAN.com. And he's really great at finding Microsoft patents, but sometimes also Microsoft code names too. And this was one I had never heard of. And I was really psyched to see all he found about it. So Little Rock is part of a Microsoft research project that's known as the Sensory Phone. The part that's called Little Rock is an architecture that takes sensor data and dumps it into a low energy consuming dedicated processor. So the idea is when you have a main processor, that can stay in low power mode and it'll only be called up if the other processor needs it. Or as Manon said in his post about it, it's only called for by Little Rock when it needs to ask for its elder brother. So,
is there a big rock?
Yeah, Big Rock, Little Rock, I guess. Yeah. So in this research phone project, there's an accelerometer, a compass, a temperature sensor, barometer, and gyroscope. And this is Microsoft investigating, you know, how can we get some of these technologies to work on even lower power devices? So it's kind of cool they're doing these kind of experiments on the processor level and not just always on the software level.
No kidding. Wow, that's really neat. And actually, if you go to the research page, research.microsoft.com, you can read all about Little Rock.
I don't know why they called it Little Rock, if there's any connection with Little Rock, or if it's just because it's, you know, Microsoft uses code name places.
It's low power. It uses Little Rock. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I like it. I mean, you know, they're doing some... I think one thing Microsoft needs to... promote more is Microsoft Research. They do, I mean, Photosynth is the most obvious forward-facing project there, but they do some amazing stuff. Well, my friends, we have come to the end of this fine episode of Windows Weekly. I thank you for your patience. We were a little late starting because of the Google I.O. non-event earlier today.
Well,
there wasn't much. You know, I kept waiting for more and nothing happened. So there you go. Dr. Kiki Science Hour coming up a little later on this afternoon, her last show on the network. So I want you all to tune in and say goodbye to Dr. Kiki. Tom Merritt and TNT coming up. And we'll do a iPad Today rerun because Sarah's still in France. She may never come back at this point. And that's just around the corner. Paul Thurrott, thank you. Mary Jo, thank you. You can find more Paul Thurrott, of course, at the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. His Windows 8 guide is just the tip of the iceberg there. Just the dregs of the coffee cup that he has his nose buried in. And don't forget Pocket Paul, his Pocket Tech app, puts Paul in your pocket. And I've had Paul in my pocket for a long time right now, and I could tell you it's very good, very nice. What a wonderful thing.
That's good, Paul.
That's good, Paul. Stay in the pocket.
We don't have a pocket Mary Jo Foley yet, but you could go to the All About Microsoft site and see what Mary Jo's about. AllAboutMicrosoft.com. It's a ZDNet/CBS Interactive blog with Linux coming to Microsoft Cloud is the most recent one.
I'm going to make a little guess here and just say that 2013 is finally going to be the year of the Linux desktop.
Yep, finally. It's about time. But it'll all be virtualized in the cloud.
Yes.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you, Paul. Thank you all for being here. We do Windows Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. But, you know, you don't have to worry if you miss the live show. We like it if you watch live, but if you miss the live show, you can subscribe and get audio or video after the fact at twit.tv. People have been asking about that new iPad iPhone podcaster app that Apple's making, and you are featured, Paul, and Mary Jo.
Am I?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Nice.
In the technology section, and it's absolutely fine. If you listen on that, we count it just like we count every impression that we make. So please feel free to subscribe if you have an iPhone or an iPad in the podcast app. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. I presume you guys will be here. It's the 5th of July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll make up some news. We'll make up something to talk about.
Stuff will happen. For what was going to be a light show, I think we went 2 hours, so.
I know. There right.
You did fine.
I blame Tango. It's all Tango's fault.
It's all because of that.
37 minutes.
We'll cut. I think we got to, Tony or whoever's editing this, Jason, cut that part out. That was really not the most interesting bit. You just cut right to where I opened it on.
Sometimes it's like a car crash. You have to kind of stare at it, and then, you know, you want to share it with
people. Well, we know we won't cut out the ad. I just cut out my fumfering around trying to get it to play.
Yeah.
That was rather long and a waste of people's time, I think.
Tango.co.uk. There you go.
Wow, look at the chat room.
Whoosh. Oh, you got to go to this site, Leo. Tango.co. You got to do this.
You got to see this. Tango.co.uk.
This is insane.
Or the blue Pikachu. Okay.
No, go to Tango. Okay.
All right. Tango.co. This is
very unhealthy.
This is the beverage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, it is.
Yeah, the delicious. All right. Too much Tango will make your hair turn ginger.
Oh, no, you got to get the middle part. The middle part is what you need to see.
Of course, it's not rendering.
It must be a flash thing or something.
Wow.
Do you have a more standard browser?
Jeez Louise. Thank you,
Apple. It is Adobe Flash. Yes, you need Flash.
I don't know what I should have Flash on here. Let's launch Chrome. It's got Flash built in.
Everything that's wrong with Great Britain in a nutshell.
Oh, now Chrome's going to do the always allow thing. I've got some horrendous bug in Chrome that I have to now go through all of my bookmarks.
It's called Chrome.
And say, yes, you may act. There's literally several thousand of them. So do you have a minute?
To go nuts.
I think it'd be faster to install Firefox. Oh, never mind. I'll take it as written that there's something wonderful at the Tango site.
Oh, you have to see. You can't.
You're not going to let me go by, huh?
Leo, why do you use a Mac?
Why?
Someone said, go to YouTube. Go to YouTube and look for the Tango. Tango soda.
See, here's the problem. I have Flash installed on this thing. I don't understand. I sound like Napoleon Dynamite.
Dude. Does it have really good Flash animation? It's just terrible is what it is.
It's just...
it's terrible.
Okay, we're now going to shut down the entire show. No, my Flash is working. It's something wrong with the Tango site. Because I just went to Flash platform. It's doing some non-standard Tango.
The question I have is, would this ad work on Windows RT? We don't know.
Yeah, guarantee it won't work on an iPad or apparently on a Safari. Wait a minute. It says, error opening the page. For more information, choose window activity.
What?
Good Lord. Tango home. 21 of 22 items. Jeez Louise, I don't even know what I'm looking at. It says not found. It can't find the flat. You're seeing the animation?
Yep.
Well, it's broken now. Maybe everybody went to see the Tango site.
Right, we broke it.
We broke Tango. I'm not kidding. It says file not found.
I suppose it's possible.
I can't use Chrome because when I launch Chrome... Oh, wait a minute. Let me launch Windows 8.
Finally,
you've convinced me that the only way to see the Tango site is via Windows 8.
It's going to be so disappointing when you finally hit this.
No,
it will.
I'm sorry.
Can we edit this all out, please? In Chrome, it's broken, too. It only opens in IE. Paul, what are you using?
IE. I'll try it in Chrome.
So the site only works in IE, apparently, according to our chat room.
It's not coming up in Chrome here either.
Site that only works in IE, that's a first.
Well, IE for the win, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Actually, in this case, it might be for the loss.
Yeah, is it that bad? Okay, I'm resuming Windows 8. Sorry, just take a moment.
It's not great. I think I can safely say it's not great.
Not that great.
It's not good.
Apparently, some people are able to do it, but others report no. And you report you can't do it in Chrome, so
it's going to be disappointing.
I think that one of their servers, you know what it is? They have multiple servers in that one of them is dead. And so it depends. It's just kind of chance if you get it right or not. Here, we'll watch it on YouTube. God, this has really killed the show.
I'm so sorry.
and the worst
the
part
is when
you see it, you're going to be so disappointed. That's the worst part.
Okay, here's a 1993.
Oh, I've picked something up, John.
Let's look at it, Ralph.
Hey, that's the catatonic kick of real oranges accosting the back of his throat.
Oh, my God. That's what terrifying.
That? No idea, Ralph. But it's definitely not Wee Willy Winky.
Morning.
Blast my tango taste buds, Tony!
Yes, Ralph.
He just bit his foot off.
Man come up to me with his kilt flying. Spanking.
You know where you've been tangoed.
Wow. I think Microsoft
like
saw
Steve
this.
Ballmer. Isn't that Steve Ballmer with a tango
You
cannon?
Know that you've been tangoed. That was... What? I think I've seen that before, or otherwise I'm having a terrible, horrible flashback. All right, let me log in. I want to see the website. Now,
I am horrified that this is taking so long.
Well, I'm on a Mac. That's why.
No, I just... see, eventually what's going to happen is you are going to see it, and then you're going to say,
why,
seriously,
Paul? Why did you do that to me? Why, Paul? Why? Yeah. Notice, by the way, I do have cocktail flow.
I would use the desktop version of IE because this site may not be in the safe list on Metro. So,
no, I think I'm going to try it in Metro.
Okay. Why not? Nothing else is
why
right.
not? Oh, never mind. It crashed.
The desktop.
Just go to the desktop, Leo. Okay. Everything's better on the desktop. Apparently, I still have the command line. Yeah,
why not?
Yeah, why not? All right, let's IE on the desktop. This is build 8400. Am I okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.